ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 4, Text Number 2. We have a sample of the prose on the board, so I'll read the whole thing and then we can repeat our sample. Tasya hava itam varshmana variyasa brihat shlokena chaujasa balena shriya yashasa virya shorya bhyamcha pita rishava itidam nama chakara. So we can repeat this part. It won't have any particular melody to it because it's prose, so whatever comes. Tasya hava itam varshmana Variyasa brihat shlokena Tasya hava itam varshmana Variyasa brihat shlokena. Did any of the Vaishnavis like to try? Okay, we'll just read the synonyms. Tasya, of him. Hava, certainly. Itam, thus. Varshmana, by the bodily features. Variyasa, most exalted. Brihat shlokena, decorated with all the high qualities that are described by poets. Cha, also. Ojasa, by prowess. Balena, by strength. Shriya, by beauty. Yashasa, by fame. Virya shorya bhyam, by influence and heroism. Cha, and pita, the father. Maharaj Nabi. Rishabha, the best. Iti, thus. Idam, this. Nama, name. Chakara, gave. Is there any water for the speaker? Anybody have some water? Translation. When the son of Maharaj Nabi became visible, he evinced all good qualities described by the great poets, namely a well-built body, with all the symptoms of the Godhead. Prowess, strength, beauty, name, fame, influence, and enthusiasm. When the father, Maharaj Nabi, saw all these qualities, he thought his son to be the best of human beings, or the supreme being. Therefore he gave him the name Rishabha. So let's repeat this. When the son of Maharaj Nabi became visible, he evinced all good qualities described by the great poets, namely, a well-built body with all the symptoms of the Godhead, prowess, strength, beauty, name, fame, influence, and enthusiasm. When the father, Maharaj Nabi, saw all these qualities, he thought his son to be the best of human beings, or the supreme being. Therefore, he gave him the name Rishabha. Purport. To accept someone as God or an incarnation of God, one must observe the symptoms of God in his body. All the symptoms were found in the body of Maharaj Nabi's extraordinarily powerful son. His body was well structured, and he displayed all the transcendental qualities. He showed great influence, and he could control his mind and senses. Consequently, he was named Rishabha, which indicates that he was the supreme living being. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we see when any incarnation of the Lord is there, there's both physical and physical signs and qualities also that are signs that he is an incarnation of the Lord. And this is something that ties into astrology. We see in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, the same thing was there during the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? His grandfather, Nilambar Chakravarti. He calculated the chart and he could see various astrological alignments that indicated a Mahapurusha. And not only that, but there's the other branch of astrology, some of the signs on the body. What's that called? Physiognomy? Yes, physiognomy. So certain, we hear about Lord Chaitanya, certain parts of a Mahapurusha are large, certain parts are small, certain parts are reddish, right? Do you remember hearing that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? There's I think 32 or so lakshanas, different symptoms of a Mahapurusha. So Rishabhdev had all these physical symptoms in his body. His father was very astonished and very happy to see this. He got exactly what he asked for. And not only did he have the physical characteristics, the well-built body with the signs of the Godhead, which you see here, Varshmana Viryasa, but he had all these additional qualities too. All of his, you know, physical characteristics and his personal qualities, they were Brihat Shlokina, they were like Uttama Shloka, they were the kind of things that were praised, you know, in choice verses by poets. And we see his mental qualities here. Ojas, he had incredible ojas, and he had bala. Sometimes they're both translated a little bit similarly, prowess and strength. What's the technical difference? Ojas means mental strength and strength of the senses. Especially, it's described in Ayurveda, when one executes brahmacharya, for example, one increases their ojas, and then there's a luminance in the body, right? The sages typically shine a bit more, and there's a longevity of life, it slows down the old age, and there's a very sharp, the mind and the senses become very sharp. That's all the effect of ojas. Thank you. And he also had, of course, bala, the physical strength. He was first of all, he was a king, right? Later on, he will show the path of the Paramahansas. Savashrama Namaskritam, I think it's described in the third chapter of the first canto regarding Rishabhdev, that he shows the path of the dhiras, the path that is respected by all of the ashramas. All the ashramas respect the sannyas, the paramahansa, right? So he showed that at the end of his life, as we know. And what are some of his other qualities? Shriya, Shri, beauty, and Yashas, fame, Virya, prowess, and Shorya, heroism. So very good qualities for a king. So he was named, therefore, Rishabha. Rishabha literally means the best one. Actually, most literally, it means a bull. Maybe you've seen in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna addresses Arjuna with several addresses that end with the word Rishabha. Can anybody think of some? Rishabha and Rishabha both mean bull. Yes, both you're thinking of Rishabha, and Rishabha also does too. You can look in the dictionary. That's the original meaning. And I'll talk about that in a moment. How it comes to mean the best. There's a system behind that. Yes. Purusharshabha in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna addresses Arjuna as Purusharshabha, best among men, right? And also Bharatarshabha, right? In the verse dealing with the four different kinds of people that approach Krishna, Bharatarshabha. So, yeah, Prabhuti was bringing up the point about Rishabha, Vrishabha. They mean a bull. And there's other words also you'll see in the Bhagavatam, Muni Pungava. Pungava means a male cow, a bull, right? And also there's other titles like Kavi Kunjara. Kunjara, what's a Kunjara? Anybody know? An elephant. So, oh, elephant among the poets. It's unusual. analogy. Oh, bull among sages, oh, elephant among... Of course, when you talk to me at Kshatriya and Purusharshabha, oh, bull among men, is literally what it means. You can kind of appreciate it in terms of Kshatriyas being well-built. But according to Amarokosha, which is the typical Sanskrit dictionary, all of these words which signify animals like bulls and lions, for example, and elephants, they all indicate Shrestha, best. They all come to mean best. So Rishabha, by extension, means the best person. And we call him Rishabha Deva, he's the Lord also. He's the best and he's the Lord. Rishabhanu, yeah. yeah. Rishabhanu, yeah, well, that's an astrological, has an astrological connotation to it. Vrisha is, what's the Rashi? What do we call it? Taurus. Taurus in English astronomy, right? Vrisha, and Bhanu means the sun. So the sun, when it's passing through the Taurus, is Rishabhanu, right? Anyway, there's a lot of astrological connotations to names. So, coming back on track here. These are some of the special qualities of Rishabhadev, and we see that when there's somebody very special, often they leave a very special legacy behind them. So not only did he teach the path of the Paramahamsas, and to some degree the Jain religion kind of idolizes him and imitates his practices like that. What's that saying, that imitation is a form of praise, yeah. yes. So, not only that, but he left behind 100 very qualified sons. We know his son was Bharata, you know, who later became Jadabharat in the Bhagavatam. We hear about him a lot in the Bhagavatam. A very qualified son. And the 9 of his other sons, Bharata was in charge, of course, of Bharatavarsha, so became named after him. And then 9 of the other sons took charge of the dweepas in Bharatavarsha, and those dweepas, like Ketumala and so on, became named after the son, after those 9 sons. And he also had 9 very elevated Paramahamsa sons. Who are they? The Navayogendras. And where do we hear about them? In the 11th canto. Who are they speaking to? Maharaj Nimi. Very important verses they speak. Some of the famous verses about the different Yuga avatars, about the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. Right? So these are very important. And 81 also became Brahmanas who took on the Karmakanda path and, you know, cause the Vedic rituals to expand and become popular on the earth at that time. So it's actually somewhat unusual for a king to have sons that are both Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. Yeah. And then renunciants too, yeah. I mean, you know, usually all the sons of kings get married, right? And you know, have to carry on the dynasty and everything. So it's quite unusual. But being earlier on in the creation, you know, there's limited people and they have to take up different roles. So, yes, we see this in medieval Europe also. Sometimes the eldest son was promised the throne and sometimes the younger sons of the king would sometimes take up a position in the church. It's also seen in medieval Europe. But it's one of the first times we see it in the Bhagavatam, that the sons of kings take on the role of Brahmanas and Paramahansa renunciants. Yes. So Krishna is described here in his incarnation as of Rishabhdev as possessing very wonderful qualities. We know in general he's called Bhagavan because he's endowed with the six main qualities that make somebody attractive: fame, beauty, strength, knowledge, renunciation, and what's the other one? Wealth, yes. So we see in this world, people in general are respected because of these qualities. If somebody has some amount of these six, even just one of them, in a proportion slightly more than everybody else, then people will want to approach them to obtain a piece of the pie, so to speak. If somebody has a lot of wealth, then you know, they'll be approached for donations and so on. We also do that as devotees sometimes. So they'll be appreciated and they'll be viewed as important based on having a larger amount of certain opulence. If somebody's very beautiful, they'll be desirable by the opposite sex. If somebody's very famous, then people will want to just be around them for, you know, just because of that. And if somebody's knowledgeable, then everybody wants to come and hear from them. And if somebody's renounced, then that also demands a certain amount of respect, right? Oh, you know, I can't do that, but he could, you know. He could renounce all these very difficult things. Amazing, so respect is given. And strength also, naturally you flock to such a person during a time of need for protection. So people who have these qualities in the material world to a certain degree are adored, and people who don't are ignored. So that's how it is, right? So that's the cruel reality of material existence. But Krishna, he has all of these qualities. So he is full in himself. He doesn't have anything really to gain by associating with anybody else. All he wants, all he's interested in is devotion. There's nobody with more fame or strength or knowledge than him, so there's nothing for him to gain externally by, you know, sharing himself with other living entities in different kinds of relationships. But he appreciates bhakti. Jai Shri Shri Gauri Dai, Shri Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Radhasham Sundaki Jai. There's a very nice verse, it's one of my favorites, from the Padyavali, that talks about these qualities of Krishna. That he doesn't look for the material qualities. Relationships in this world, everybody's always analyzing, comparing how much quality of this you have, how much of that you have, right? And based on that, they'll want to associate with you to a greater or lesser degree. But Krishna doesn't see that. And here's a very interesting verse that shows Krishna's, how he approaches relationships. Vyadhasya charanam dhruvasya chavayo vidya gajendrasya ka kubjaya kimunam arupa madikam kintat sudam nodanam vangshakko vidarasya yadavapater ugrasya kimporusham bhaktya tushyati kevalam na chagunai bhakti priyo madhava. It goes like this. Where was the hunter Dharma's piety? So, anyway, short backstory. In the Puranas, there's somebody called Dharma Vyada, the hunter Dharma. And long story short, due to something from his past life, he became a butcher in this life. But he was also a great devotee at the same time. So he was renowned as being a very great saint, even though he had the occupation of being a butcher. So the question is, where was the hunter Dharma's good behavior? You know, being a butcher is not, you know, achara. That's not a good example. Where was Dhruva's maturity? Dhruva was such a young boy. Where was Gajendra's knowledge? Where was Kubja's beauty? Where was Sudama's wealth? Where was Vidura's noble birth? Where was Ugrasena's chivalrous strength? Lord Madhava is pleased only by devotional service and not by material qualifications. So here we see various other gunas that people usually value highly in the material relationships. Somebody has very good behavior, example, pious behavior, then they're respected. But the Dharma, the hunter, Dharma, even though he's a great devotee, he was a butcher, so Krishna still reciprocated with him. Dhruva, he was a young boy. Generally, old age is respected. If you're old, then people would touch your feet just because of that, right? And it's a good culture. But Dhruva was a young boy. He didn't have that quality. Still, he had bhakti, and Madhava was very pleased with that. Gajendra, where was his knowledge? He was an elephant. You know, generally, animals are not very intelligent. Of course, he did offer some prayers in the Bhagavatam, but in general, animals are not full of knowledge, right? Where was Kubja's beauty? Trivakra, she's called. Bent in three places. A triple hunchback. So, yes, Krishna didn't see that. He saw the devotion. She was willing to defy Kamsa, right? The washerman wasn't willing to defy Kamsa. Kubja was, to please Krishna. So, where was Sudama's wealth? He was embarrassed even to present the small parcel of chipped rice that was even a little bit old and moldy. So where was his wealth, and where was Vidura's noble birth? He's called Kshatta in the Bhagavatam, right? That his, he was, you know, a maidservant, the son of a maidservant, a Dasiputra. So generally that's not looked upon very highly, but he had such wonderful qualities and such devotion that when Krishna would come to Hastinapur, he would stay often in the house of Vidura and bypass the opulent arrangements of Duryodhana on the way, right? And where was Ugrasena's chivalry? Ugrasena was a Kshatriya, but his own son, Kamsa, locked him up in prison, and somebody else freed him and gave him back his kingdom. Krishna gave him back his kingdom. That's not very good for a Kshatriya, right? So you have to fight to get back what's yours, right? So somebody give it back. Kshatriyas aren't allowed to accept charity. That's why Indra in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita says, you know, you may think that Vamana Dev came and, you know, helped me, but actually he just embarrassed me. Because he tricked, by a trick, he got back the kingdom and he gave it back to me in charity. He should have, you know, come to the battlefield with me and we should have fought to get the kingdom back. But he's jokingly feeling like that, right? They all feel like they didn't get the mercy in different ways. So that's one of the ways he explains it. So Krishna's bhakti priya madhava is described here. He likes bhakti. He's not interested in gunas, material qualities. There's another verse in the Padyavali along the similar lines, very interesting. Dina pandurti namate smaranya devendra patitau hamutsahe bhakta vatsalataya tvayi shrute mama kam hridayam ashru kampate. It says, O Krishna, when I hear your name, Dina Bandhu, then me, who am very fallen, I get some little bit of enthusiasm. I get some utsaha. And then when I hear that you're Bhakta Vatsala, then my heart starts beating very fast and my heart starts pounding. So this is the theme of hope, right? One of the symptoms that we'll discuss in a moment is called Ashabandha. The advanced devotees have this quality of being Asha, as we know, means hope, and Bandha means binding or bound in this case, so bound by hope. So even though sometimes in the sadhaka stage, we kind of go through, as we may go through some stages of hopelessness or even faithlessness to a certain degree, but there's a symptom of bhava bhakti that they're bound up. They're even though they want to sometimes also give up their lives because the pain of not attaining Krishna or being separated from Krishna is so great, but they maintain their lives, as Raghunath Das Goswami says, holding onto a single thread of hope. They maintain their lives. So when we hear of Krishna's Bhakta Vatsala quality, that it gives us some hope, because otherwise we don't, Krishna is up there with the greatest qualities and, the most loving devotees, and we're, here in Kali Yuga of the, overrun by anarthas, and, what's the gap? Well, the gap is two things. The gap from our side is our parishrama, as we know, and from Krishna's side is the kripa, so that fills in the gap. The hard work, the hard endeavor of the devotees to please Krishna, like in the Mother Yashoda's pastime, right? Binding Damodar. The hard work and the mercy of Krishna were the two fingers. So, as we talked about this quality, Ashabandha, it's mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Goswami. It's one of the symptoms of Bhava Bhakti, actually. We know some of the symptoms. We can just refresh ourselves. Very important. Kshantir avyata kala tvam viraktir mana shunyata ashabandha samutkanta namagani sadaruchi asaktis tadgunakhyane pritis tadvasatisthale ityadayo nubhavasyur jata bhavan kure jane. So the characteristics of a person in whom the bud of bhava has blossomed are as follows. Kshanti, first he has some tolerance and forgiveness. Avyarta kala tvam, this is a very important quality, probably you remember this from the Bhakti Shastri. They don't waste time. They use all their time for Krishna. And then virakti, detachment from enjoyment. Mana shunyata, pridelessness. We know in the third verse of the Shikshashtakam, amanina manadena. This is the two elements of, you could say, mana shunyata. And, amanina, not wanting any respect for yourself, and manadena, on the other hand, giving all respect to others. I remember not too long ago, Bhakti Vigan Goswami gave a class here in Vrindavan, and he actually touched on this point, which I found very relevant. Out of the four things, all right, being tolerant as a tree, more humble than a blade of grass, not wanting respect for yourself, and giving respect to others, that out of those four, amanina is actually the hardest. Because, respect means also some appreciation. We do some services, we're doing voluntary devotional service, and, sometimes we want, I don't need much, he said. Just a little bit of appreciation would really, sometimes we feel a need for just even a little appreciation, amanina, but we can't even want for that. that's amanina. So that's maybe the hardest one to to cultivate. So mana shunyata, pridelessness, ashabandha, confidence in the Lord's mercy. That's a good way to translate it. Confidence in the Lord's mercy. You're bound up by hope, literally is what it means. But you're confident in the Lord's mercy. Samutkanta, longing for the Lord. Namagane sadaruchi, constant taste for singing the names of the Lord. asakti, attachment, to discussing about the Lord's qualities, and pritis tadvasati stali, attachment to living in abode of the Lord, like Vrindavan. So, Asha Bandha, there's a very nice verse by Rupa Goswami, also in the Padyavali, about this principle of Asha Bandha, of retaining hope. It goes like this: I am very weak and lazy to do even the smallest devotional service, and so when I hear of the peerless and difficult to perform services performed by the great devotees in ancient times, my heart burns with despair. O Lord, O killer of Agasura, when I hear that your waves of mercy splash everyone from the demigod Brahma down to the most insignificant creature, then my heart becomes sprinkled with a cooling drop of hope. So we have this two stages, you know. At first, oh, you read the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita and all the wonderful qualities and amazing service rendered by these great devotees we all hear about, and then your heart gets burnt by a feeling of hopelessness. How will I ever, you know, mirror that? But then hearing about the Lord's mercy, then the heart becomes sprinkled with a cooling drop of hope. So then that again cools the heart down to some hope. So this is what's required. There's another very interesting prayer in the Stavamala by Rupa Goswami called Karpanya Panjika Stotram, which is a series of presentations about one's very lowly state to the Lord. So there Rupa Goswami says, although I am the lowest and you the highest, although I am a fool and you the greatest philosopher, although I am wicked and you the most saintly, and although I commit offenses when I think of you, still, O King and Queen, the shadow of whose holy name delivers one from a host of sins, please be kind to this person who sometimes chants your holy name. So it's a very nice verse. And so we see that this is the qualities of the advanced devotees. They hold on to this hope. They have great hope in the Lord's mercy. We see also the difference between the different classes of devotees, the Kanishthas, the Madhyamas, and the Uttamas, in terms of how much they can face off against, you know, the various tests of Maya, or the various Arnartas, or qualities that are detrimental. My Guru Maharaj, Bhaktititha Maharaj, one time explained this in a very innovative way, I thought, that the Kanishthas, they may sometimes fall prey to the tests of Maya, or they may fall prey to the temptations in the environment, or to the bad qualities such as anger and envy and so on. So they may sometimes fall prey to that because they have not yet really reached the stage of Nishtha, the Kanishthas, okay? But the Madhyamas, when presented with a test of Maya, let's say, or a situation that tests you like that, then they will manage to avoid falling into the trap, okay? They will manage to avoid the Maya. But Uttamas, not only do they manage to avoid, but they convert the Maya. And examples are, for example, Haridas Thakur, the prostitute, was sent by Ramachandra Khan to try and make Haridas fall down, to try and ruin his reputation so that nobody would listen to him, right? That was the plan of Ramachandra Khan. But what did he do? He didn't fall prey to the Maya. He didn't just manage to run away and avoid the Maya. But he converted the Maya. And in that case, that lady became a very advanced sadhvi who worshipped Tulsi and chanted as much holy names as Haridas Thakur himself. amazing. And Prahlad Maharaj, while in school, usually when people go to college, they get ruined, right? Devotee children, that's an issue. So, unless they've got good training, but it's a dangerous situation. But Prahlad Maharaj, being surrounded by all the sons of the Asuras, he converted them all into great devotees. He had them dancing and chanting in the classrooms. So this is some difference. So we'll end there a little bit early. If anybody has any questions or comments or anything that they want to add. Prabhuji, yes. Okay. So sounds more like Murgari the hunter, what you're asking in one sense, because then we know the story that he did stop hunting and so on. In the case of Dharmavyara, who's mentioned in the verse, he didn't meet Narada Muni directly. He was, there was some course in his previous life, and he met, do you remember the name of the other person that he met? There was, anyway, there's a whole backstory to it. I told it very briefly. But some of the qualities mentioned in that verse were persistent, like Vidura's birth that stayed with him his whole life, right? Some of them were changed after meeting Krishna, like Kubja. So in the case of the hunted Dharmavyara, it's quite unusual, because he is part of his course or his karma to still have the occupation of a butcher, but even while doing that, he was a great devotee of the Lord. I don't think he was actually killing the things himself. He was actually just buying them from hunters and selling them. And he would use the money for worshipping Krishna and so on, and serving the devotees. So it's an extreme example for sure, but due to some curse, he was still in that position even while doing devotional service. So it's an unusual situation, not to be imitated. Quite unusual. Yeah. Yes. Oh, please go ahead.
Regarding that sloka you mentioned from Sister Ashton, you remember His Holiness
Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj,
So, it's an observation by one great devotee also. He said that out of the four things which you mentioned, the toughest one is the third one, right?
Yes.
But he said the easiest one is the fourth one.
Yes.
And if one engages one's mind in showing respect to everyone, remembering that Krishna exists, then he may not find time to think of other things. There are many better people.
That's a good point. Yes, if you do the fourth one, that will help you very much to do the other three. You won't have time to worry about tolerating and so on. You'll be too busy giving respect. Yes, thank you, Fuji. Any other questions or comments, additions? Okay, then we'll finish there. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.